Welcome to the Western Magazine Hour, stories and articles about the American West, produced at the Recording Library of West Texas.
Hello, this is Michael, and I'll be reading from True West Magazine, History of the American Frontier, April 2023 edition. Cowboy Up, by various authors. From Montana to Texas, a summer road trip is a great way to immerse yourself in the history and heritage of the American West. I remember my parents loading my sister Catherine and me into the family station wagon. It was the late 1960s, and our vacation destination was almost always my grandmother's home in Phoenix, Arizona. To avoid the heat in the summer, my folks usually left very early in the morning, like 1 a.m. early, from North Hollywood. On Interstate 10, the city gave way to desert outside Palm Springs. My dad never missed a gas stop in Blythe before crossing the Colorado River. Before the interstate was completed, the Arizona leg of the trip was on U.S. 60, past the cotton fields and little villages of the Herquahala Valley, into the cowboy town of Wickenburg, then south into Phoenix as the sun was coming up. We always felt a great relief to be back at my grandmother's house and excited for the adventures our parents had planned for us. Over 50 years later, I still love the excitement of a road trip with my wife and family, the thrill of planning the vacation, mapping the route, researching the places we will see. It never grows old. The anticipation is priceless. We just don't leave at 1 a.m. in the morning. At True West Magazine, 70 years since our first issue, we still believe there is no better way to experience the American West than to pack your bags, load up your car, and hit the road. In this 21st edition of our travel issue, we feature getaways written by six seasoned Western writers whose passion for the West and their home states is infectious. We invite you to pull out your maps and dreams and take a road trip to Arizona, Missouri, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Montana, South Dakota, Texas, and or Wyoming. We know you will make dreams come true and will start planning your next road trip as soon as you return home. By Stuart Rosebrook. Wyoming. Discover the cattle ranching history of the Cowboy State on three heritage travel adventures by Candy Moulton. Cattle Trails to the Bighorn Basin. Scotsman Peter McCulloch immigrated to the United States in 1853, spent time in Boston and St. Louis, and served during the Civil War in the Union Army with the Missouri Mounted Volunteers, often carrying dispatches throughout Missouri and Arkansas, and later becoming a wagon boss. He then worked for a survey party staking out a transcontinental railroad for the Union Railroad in Nebraska. But by 1864, he was at Fort Bridger. Judge William A. Carter, whose family roots are at Carter's Grove in Virginia, had served as the post-settler at Fort Bridger, and his presence in the Bridger Valley led him to begin raising cattle for his Carter Cattle Company. Peter McCulloch became the range foreman for Carter's operation, establishing himself as a top-notch cowboy and manager. In 1879, McCulloch remodded a crew that trailed 3,800 head of Carter cattle into the Bighorn Basin. McCulloch took the cattle from the Bridger Valley near Evanston and Fort Bridger across the Red Desert to South Pass, through the Lander area and across the Wind River Basin before continuing into the Bighorn Basin, where he established a headquarters west of where Cody would eventually be established, on Carter Creek, named for his boss. McCulloch and Carter had effectively expanded Wyoming's cattle operations across the western half of the Wyoming Territory. The McCulloch Peaks, east of Cody, were well known as the habitat for one of Wyoming's wild horse herds, are named for Peter McCulloch. But, as often happens, the spelling is different. Some of the earliest livestock in the upper Green River Basin around Pinedale and Big Piney were cattle herds trailed in from the west, Nevada and Oregon. The Green River Drift, a cattle trail in use since the 1890s to move cattle between summer and winter ranges, is a 58-mile long route that has been on the National Historic Register since 1913. The drift is still used by members of the Green River Cattle Association and crosses both public and private land. History of the ranching and homesteading culture of the Upper Green is interpreted at the Summers Homestead Living History Museum north of Pinedale, open Friday through Sunday during the summer. Restored buildings include the 100-year-old two-story log homestead house, the shop, log ice house, underground cellar, log bunkhouse, meat house, log barn, and historic outhouse. Dubois. A gateway to Jackson Hole, Grand Teton National Park, and Yellowstone National Park, Dubois maintains its small-town persona. The area is known for its Whiskey Mountain herd of Rocky Mountain Bighorn sheep. Learn more about the sheep at the National Bighorn Sheep Center. The early ranching history of the area is highlighted at the Dubois Museum, Wind River Historical Center. Dubois has evidence of visits by Butch Cassidy, who had ranch property near the town, shopped at Welty's General Store, and did business at the post office. Following the Texas Trail and Nelson's story. Cowboys drove cattle from Texas in 1866 over a route across New Mexico and Colorado that became known as the Goodnight Loving Trail, named for the two men who forged the route, Charles Goodnight and Oliver Loving. They sold their herd to John Wesley Iliff, who became a major cattleman with headquarters in present-day northeastern Colorado by the town of Iliff that he helped establish. Once Iliff bought that Goodnight-loving cattle herd in 1868, he pushed the animals on to range even farther north. The Goodnight-loving, or Texas Cattle Trail, made its first incursion into Wyoming near Cheyenne. It ultimately extended to the west and north, as cowboys pushed animals across eastern Wyoming and on into Montana territory. The Texas Cattle Trail passed near the present communities of Pine Bluff, Cheyenne, Chugwater, Lusk, Moorcroft, and Sheridan. There are markers to the trail near Lusk on U.S. 1820 along Highway 387 west of Wright and in Moorcroft. In a separate cattle drive, Nelson's story in 1866 bought a cattle herd from Texas through Kansas and along the Oregon Trail to Fort Laramie. There he began following the route to Montana along the hotly contested Bozeman Trail, a trail that Lakota and Northern Cheyenne tribal members resisted because it was an incursion into their territory. By the time Story's herd arrived at Fort Phil Kearny, one of the three forts established to provide protection to travelers along the Bozeman Trail, he was told not to go any farther due to attacks by tribal warriors. Story did not heed the warnings and pushed his herd on. They crossed the Yellowstone River and turned west, finally reaching Virginia City, Montana Territory's prominent gold camp in early December. Less than a month later, the Lakota struck a major blow against the frontier army when they lured soldiers, led by Lieutenant William J. Fetterman, over Lodge Trail Ridge, just north of Fort Kearny, and into the decisive battle that led to the deaths of Fetterman and the 80 men who were in his command. In less than a year, the military withdrew from the region, and Little Wolf of the Northern Cheyenne tribe burned Fort Kearny. More than a decade after Nelson's story took his herd through the Powder River Basin and along the Bozeman Trail to Montana, John B. Kendrick brought a herd of Texas cattle to the area, ending his drive in 1879 in Sheridan, where he established the Kendrick Cattle Company. He later became Wyoming's governor and then senator and built a spectacular mansion home for his family. That is now the Trail End State Historic Site. Sundance. Harry Alonzo Longabo spent 18 months in the town jail after he pleaded guilty to stealing a horse, saddle, and gun from an employee of the VVV ranch near Sundance, Wyoming. His time in the jail ended when Wyoming Governor Thomas Moonlight pardoned him. But there was a lasting connection to the town when he became known as the Sundance Kid. Learn more about Longobo's time in the town that gave him his better-known name with a visit to the Crook County Museum. Cherokee Cattle Trails. The Cherokee Trail, stretching some 900 miles from Fort Gibson on the Texas Trail to Fort Bridger, became the major thoroughfare to the west and was a route to California, making it the longest branch of the California National Historic Trail. About 100,000 head of livestock traveled over this trail prior to 1861. Cattle drives on its route involved cowboys from Arkansas taking cattle to California, and it was also used by Mormons driving herds to Utah. The first use of the trail took place in 1849 when a wagon train led by Lewis Evans, including Cherokee Indians and gold seekers from Arkansas, traveled across Oklahoma and Kansas to the Santa Fe Trail, which they followed to Bent's Old Fort and continued west to the site of Pueblo, Colorado, before heading north. Passing near where Laramie, Wyoming, would be established as a railroad town when the Union Pacific was built nearly two decades later, the travelers then headed west around the north side of the Medicine Bow Mountains and Elk Mountain. They went through the area that later became Rawlins and then across the Red Desert, eventually reaching Fort Bridger to join the main trail to California, even then busy with Argonauts intent on getting to the gold fields. The first cattle drive into North Park, Colorado, on the North Platte and Encampment River valleys of Wyoming was on a different trail the Cherokees forged in 1850. The south branch of the Cherokee Trail took them north to Walden, Colorado, then along the eastern flank of the Sierra Madre, across the Encampment River just north of Riverside, and west to pass near the present-day town of Bags, and on west across to Red Desert to Fort Bridger. Follow their route by taking Highway 230 west out of Laramie to Encampment, Highway 70, open late May to late October, to Bags. Then head north on Highway 789 to Interstate 80 and follow it west to Fort Bridger. This southern branch used by the Cherokee people was short-lived, but the Northern Cherokee Trail across Wyoming eventually became the same route as the Overland Trail, a major pathway used by travelers, particularly in the 1860s during the last significant years of overland wagon travel before the Union Pacific Railroad arrived, giving travelers another way to cross the West. Evanston. The Union Pacific Railroad construction pushed across Wyoming in 1867 to 69, spawning tent cities and leading to the establishment of Wyoming Territory. Evanston might have just been one of the many end-of-tracks towns that grew quickly and then disappeared, but the Union Pacific later determined it would become a headquarters community. This gave it prominence, and the community still celebrates its diverse history at the Uneta County Museum and with the unique collections of the Chinese Joss House Museum. Candy Moulton hangs her hat near Encampment, Wyoming, within sights of ruts on the south branch of the Cherokee Trail. Montana. Discover the historic trails that built the Big Sky State by Quack Grass Sally. Trails. Montana has always been a land of many trails. For centuries, the native peoples crisscrossed these lands on game trails their ancestors had followed, finding food and campsites in its mountains, valleys, and plains. When Meriwether Lewis and William Clark of the Corps of Discovery trekked west and reached this region in 1804 to 06, they were the first white explorers to use these routes and see these lands. Clark's journal noted that the fertile landscapes were made all the more wondrous by the abundant rivers, lakes, and streams which fed it. Quickly on their heels, fur trappers and traders followed that trail until the 1840s, when the dwindling supply and demand for beaver no longer drew them. Gold was discovered in Virginia City, Montana in 1863, and soon a flow of gold miners were following the Bridger Trail, Bridger Road, which connected the Oregon Trail to the gold fields of Montana. The influx of people wanting to head northwest prompted John Bozeman and John Jacobs to scout out a new route from central Wyoming to Montana. This new Bozeman Trail created a more direct route through the Powder River country, the region of the Lakota, Cheyenne, Crow, and Arapaho people, who quickly resented the growing stream of white settlers into their lands. Raids on the settlers grew, and unrest was brewing between the cultures. In 1864, Colonel William O. Collins, the commandant at Fort Laramie, became worried about the conflicts along the Bozeman Trail. He requested Jim Bridger lead a party of settlers along the new route to the gold mines in what was now Montana Territory. Over that spring and summer, 10 wagon trains made the trip, two guided by Bridger himself. The following year, the unrest along the Bozeman Trail grew, forcing Major General Grenville M. Dodge to order Brigadier General Patrick E. Connor to lead the first Powder River expedition to end the raids along the trail. For years, the unrest continued, reaching a head in 1876 when the Lakota and Cheyenne people vanquished Lieutenant Colonel George A. Custer and the U.S. Army at the now famous Battle of the Little Bighorn. Cattle. Trails brought miners and settlers to Montana Territory, but they also brought the cattlemen. One of the first major cattle drives to Montana was made by Nelson Story Sr. in 1866. Having been a gold miner himself, and after his big hit at Alder Gulch in Virginia City, Montana, years earlier, Story knew the demand for fresh meat in the gold fields was as intense as the hunt for gold. With the end of the Civil War and the economy of Texas devastated, Story decided that with the extreme number of cattle roaming all over Texas, he could gather up a large herd for very little expense. Using his mining profits, it is estimated he spent nearly $10,000 for approximately 1,000 head of Texas Longhorns. Some say it might have been up to 3,000 head. And was determined to herd them northward along the Bozeman Trail to the gold fields of Montana. When Story and his wranglers reached Fort Phil Kearney, between what is now Buffalo and Sheridan, Wyoming, the U.S. Army demanded Story quit his drive north because of the growing unrest with the Indians. The newly seasoned Texan trail boss was determined to continue moving his herd and disregarded the Army's orders. Throughout the rest of the trail drive, Story had encounters with Lakota warriors. During one skirmish, a man was killed. But in December 1866, the herd arrived in what is now present-day Livingston, Montana. Story soon established a thriving cattle business, selling to hungry gold miners at 10 times the Texas prices. By 1870, Nelson Story had built himself a ranch in the Paradise Valley of Bozeman, becoming the leading cattleman on the open range of the Northern Plains. When the Northern Pacific Railroad arrived in Montana in 1881, the earlier hardships of ranching greatly improved, and Nelson Story used his cattle fortune to invest in banking, mercantile, and grain. The Story Flour Mill opened in 1882, producing 100 bushels a day of fine Montana flour, and became a major source of flour for the U.S. Army at Fort Ellis. He later supplied flour to the Crow Indian Reservation in southeastern Montana, which helped make him the first millionaire of Montana. By 1884, the Montana Stock Growers Association was formed, and before long, with the use of barbed wire fencing, the vast open ranges were no more. Land preservation and smaller ranch herds became the norm, and in 1889, the territory of Montana became a state. Tobacco gold. On a sunny May afternoon in 1863, several men were camping along a small stream surrounded by groves of alder trees. William Fairweather and Henry Edgar decided to prospect and see if they could pan enough gold to buy some tobacco. When the first small pan showed over $2 worth of gold, the men knew the gulch had the makings of a gold claim. This discovery of gold in Alder Gulch was the foundation of the town of Virginia City, one of the biggest boom towns in Montana Territory. Word of gold in Montana spread, and soon miners and fortune seekers alike flocked to the territory. The hillside of Alders were clear-cut for building materials and fuel, and the town grew. In 1864, the city was the most populated place in Montana, with over 5,000 inhabitants. At its peak, it is estimated 10,000 people lived in what they referred to as 14-mile city for all the small settlements that lined the gulch. By 1865, Virginia City was designated as the new territorial capital of Montana. It became a hub for activities and was dubbed the Social City, where diverse supplies and people came together. A wide variety of businesses prospered, and over 1,200 buildings lined its streets. In the early years, Alder Gulch and Virginia City included Euro-Americans, Indians, Mexicans, and African-Americans. By 1870, about one-third of the population of Virginia City was Chinese. At first, the mining around Virginia City was done using hand tools, sluice boxes and pans. Lode, or hard rock mining, was also taking place in the upper part of Alder Gulch, but it took much more manpower and was much harder than the placer mining and never seemed to be as productive. Hard rock mining is generally defined as the extraction of metals using underground mining methods. By 1867, the norm was hydraulic mining, in which jets of pressurized water from hoses washed down the hillsides of dirt. Piles of rocks and hydraulic cuts filled the area. In 1898, large floating dredges chewed up the ground, leaving behind distinctive tailings and dredge ponds. Many communities along the dredges' paths in the gulch were completely destroyed, but Virginia City was never dug up, as its foundations were not built on gold-bearing gravels. The railroad's arrival into Montana brought with it an increased demand for gold and silver. A branch line railroad reached Alder Gulch in 1901, but it did not extend the 10 miles to Virginia City because the tracks would have interfered with the dredging operations. Mining in Alder Gulch had long-reaching effects on settlement and the trails of the West. Its gold contributed to the expansion of transportation and the national economy. It wasn't until the Virginia City newspapers announced the discovery of gold in Last Chance Gulch, Helena, Montana, that many of its people moved farther north to make their fortunes. The territorial capital was relocated to Helena, and before long, construction in Virginia City had declined, with many of its older places falling into ruin. In 1899, Henry Edgar, one of the men who first discovered gold at Alder Gulch, along with members of the Montana Historical Society, established in 1865, decided that the history of Virginia City needed to be preserved. By 1907, the town was well into fulfilling that wish. Five road agents buried at Boot Hill were identified, reburied, and given new headstones. Preservation continued with the Thompson Hickman Museum, built in 1918. With the growing number of automobile travelers in the 1920s, tourists started to arrive and learn the history of the Alder Gulch area. In 1828, a large marble marker was placed at the spot where Henry Edgar and his partner found their tobacco gold. Today, Virginia City is considered one of the most preserved placer mining camps of the 1860s West. With its preserved architecture and historical significance, Virginia City has gained national recognition with almost 500,000 visitors annually. Main Street, Virginia City, and the Thompson Hickman Museum will let you step back in time to discover this Montana gold boomtown. Visit historic buildings filled with thousands of preserved artifacts from daily life in a mining town. Enjoy the brewery follies and the Virginia City Players for fun entertainment for the whole family. Montana Copper. With the backdrop of the Rocky Mountains Continental Divide, Butte began as nothing more than a camp of miners looking for gold and silver in the late 1800s. the growing numbers of successful miners and those who followed had the town enlarging at an almost daily rate. In addition, Butte businesses were creating a downtown district, which soon was referred to as Uptown Butte. A huge fire in 1879 devastated the city, burning down the entire central business district. When its citizens and the city council decided to rebuild, a new law went into order requiring all new buildings in Uptown Butte to be built of brick or stone. Most of these buildings are still standing in Butte today. After the turn of the century, gold and silver were still readily mined, but it was the introduction of electricity that expanded the copper mining. The growth created the bustling city's nickname, Richest Hill on Earth. By the 1890s, Butte was reported to supply over 25% of the world's copper and up to 50% of the United States copper. It became the largest city between Chicago and San Francisco, with over 100,000 people. From the beginning, Butte's mining successes drew immigrants from all over the world. By 1900, one-fourth of the city's residents were Irish. The wide mixture of cultures gave Butte a rather wild reputation with its numerous saloons, as well as Mercury Street's Venus Alley, or Red Light District. Butte became famous for its variety of ethnic foods, and diners could find Scandinavian, Lefse, Cornish pastries, and Irish stews and meats in its dining places. Along with the Irish, Butte was home to a large number of Chinese immigrants. One famous establishment in Butte, the Pekin Noodle Parlor, is still the oldest continuously running Chinese restaurant in America. In 1899, Standard Oil Company, wanting to invest in the area, purchased numerous mines and smelters. The conglomerate was called the Amalgamated Copper Mining Company, which soon became Anaconda Mining Company. Throughout the 1900s, this company maintained mining operations in Butte, merging into the Arco Company, until all mining operations stopped in 1983. Today, visitors can learn about the history of Butte and mining in Montana at the World Museum of Mining, which is an amazing stop in which to explore the history of mining in the state. With over 50 exhibit buildings and an underground tour, it offers a glimpse into this unique industrialization of Montana and America. Wander through a turn-of-the-century mining town and visit over 50 buildings, from the 100-foot-high headframe to the heart of Hell-Roaring Gulch. Displays and exhibits focus on mining and the related culture that made Butte. Enhance your visit by taking an underground guided tour into the depths of the Orphan Girl Mine to learn the history of mining and see the Orphan Girl vein and the original workings of the mine. Quackgrass Sally is a working ranch wife and freelance author in Montana. She writes about the West from her own experiences, having ridden her horse and driven her covered wagon thousands of miles along the Western historic trails. Arizona. Discover the Grand Canyon State's rich history of ranching, mining, and railroads in its small towns. By Stuart Rosebrook. With the growth of Las Vegas, Nevada, many visitors fly into the city that never sleeps to begin a tri-state southwestern adventure in the Silver State and to its neighbors, Utah and Arizona. But for those intending to visit communities in central and southern Arizona, Phoenix is their hub. In either case, heritage travelers to northern Arizona from Las Vegas or Phoenix will soon discover in Kingman or Williams, respectively, one of the most historic routes of Western travel, Route 66. Northern Arizona. A list of the icons of the West usually is full of the famous and infamous, Mustangs and buffaloes, cowboy hats and boots, stately saguaros and giant redwoods. But right in the middle of that list will always be a highway that sparks international recognition upon its utterance, Route 66. And Arizona just happens to be the state with the longest stretches of the historic Mother Road. From the California to New Mexico boundaries, Route 66 travelers will discover the history of America in the West. Long before the first stretch of U.S. Highway 66 was excavated and paved, the route we know today at Route 66 and Interstate 40 across the northern Arizona had been traversed for centuries. Water-determined routes in the arid climate and the construction of Beale's Wagon Road, the Santa Fe High Railway, Route 66, and I-40 all followed the water. Long before the latter two, the Army, ambitious settlers, and the railroad set up camps, way stops, and towns at key sources of water. Driving in from Las Vegas, travelers to northern Arizona can arrive in Arizona on I-40 via U.S. 95 through Needles, U.S. 93 to Kingman via the Hoover Dam, a highly recommended stop and tour, or take the long way, U.S. 95 to I-40 to Arizona 10 near Topuk for a great side road to the historic mining town of Oatman. Watch out for the donkeys. For travelers coming from Las Vegas, Kingman on I-40 is the first major stop in northern Arizona. Those feeling nostalgic for the bygone days of U.S. highways before the interstates should schedule a weekend in Kingman to visit its Route 66 museums, shops, and restaurants. Check in at the Kingman Visitor Center first to get an introduction to the city and local happenings. While in town, before heading north and east on old Route 66, stop by the local Mojave History and Art Museum, the town's Railroad Museum, and Bonelli House. Before you go, plan your stay in Kingman at explorekingman.com. From Kingman to Williams, travelers had two route options, either 115 miles on I-40 or the scenic old Route 66, which, if you have the time, could easily include an overnight or two in Peach Springs on the west rim of the Grand Canyon on the Halalapi Indian Reservation. The drive on 66 through the small villages of Hualapi, Antares, Hackberry, Valentine, Crozier, Truxton, and Seligman is an enjoyable slow trip into the past, including an old-fashioned hamburger and ice cream at Del Gallio's Snow Cap Drive-In in Seligman. Gateway to the Grand Canyon. In 1901, the Santa Fe Railway opened its rail line to its luxurious El Tovar Hotel on the south rim of the Grand Canyon. Ever since, Williams has been known as the gateway to the Grand Canyon. With the construction of Route 66 in the 1920s, travelers would arrive in Williams by car or passenger train and enjoy the friendly western atmosphere of the mountain town before taking the train to and from the natural wonder. In 1989, after a 21-year hiatus, the Grand Canyon Railway began operating daily, and once again, travelers could park and stay in Williams and take the train to the national park. The modern railway even has package deals for visitors to stay in Williams and at the Grand Canyon, a classic way to enjoy both the fun-filled town and the park. Williams is a four-season city and has shopping, restaurants, and hotels for all tastes and budgets. The summertime is filled with events, including parades, rodeos, and Route 66 auto rallies. The Grand Canyon Railway has its own special events, including Steam Saturdays, when excursions on the first Saturday of the month, March to September, are pulled by a restored steam locomotive. In the winter, the very popular Polar Express train excursions in November and December are for all ages. A great way to plan your stay in Williams is to contact the Williams Visitor Center at experiencewilliams.com. Central Arizona. Arizona's Yavapai and Maricopa counties are two of the largest in the country. Visitors who want to experience almost every aspect of the Grand Canyon State will find in these historically, geographically, and culturally diverse counties. From day trips to weeks-long adventures, consider three towns as the perfect headquarters for experiencing all the counties have to offer. Prescott, Wickenburg, and Cave Creek. Prescott. Nicknamed everybody's hometown by an intrepid booster, Prescott offers a friendly, mile-high mountain atmosphere and historic downtown, welcoming millions of visitors annually. The original territorial capital of Arizona, Prescott almost immediately became an important crossroad of commerce in the fledgling territory. Today, Prescott is the Yavapai County seat and one of the state's most significant commercial, educational, and tourism centers. The 136th annual Prescott Frontier Days and the world's oldest rodeo is scheduled for June 28th through July 4th. Get your tickets early, as it quickly sells out. Those who love a parade will want to be in town for the annual Frontier Days Parade on July 1st. This year's theme is Dances with Bulls and honors the skills of the rodeo bull riders. Prescott, with its historic downtown plaza, is also an outdoors, festival, and history lovers' destination. Because it is surrounded by the beautiful Bradshaw Mountains and within driving distance to the historic mountain mining town of Jerome, outdoor enthusiasts flock to Prescott year-round. Almost every weekend from May to October, the Yavapai County Courthouse Plaza is host to a festival, while in December, Prescott transforms itself into Christmas City. Museums that celebrate the community's heritage and history are must visits when in the mountain town. Charlotte Hall Museum, which will celebrate its centennial in 2028, is the state's premier territorial living history center. Downtown, the Prescott Western Heritage Center provides a great introduction to the county's history and nonprofit volunteer history organizations. The Phippen Museum has the state's best cowboy art collection, and the Indigenous Peoples Museum is the perfect stop at which to learn more about Arizona's original residents. Start at Prescott's Chamber of Commerce or go to prescott.org to plan a vacation to the Mile High City that proves every day why it's everybody's hometown. Wickenburg. Located in the beautiful high Sonoran Desert of Maricopa County, Wickenburg is one of the oldest communities in central and northern Arizona. Founded in 1863 after the discovery of gold in the area, the mining and ranching town was built along the banks of the Hassayampa River and quickly grew into one of the territory's most important crossroads and commercial communities. Over 150 years later, Wickenburg is still an important hub of economic activity for the county. Best known today for its Western Ranch resorts, ranching, roping, and arts community. When I visit Wickenburg, I love to park downtown and walk the highly walkable city. Enjoy the local shops, art galleries, and restaurants while making time to visit the world-class Desert Caballeros Western Museum. One of the most popular and well-attended museum events is the annual Cowgirl Up Art from the Other Half of the West Invitational Exhibition and Sale, which is now in its 18th year and will be on exhibit from March 31st to September 3rd, 2023. If you love festivals, parades, and rodeos, make plans to attend the 75th Annual Rush Days and Senior Pro Rodeo next February. Planning a visit to Wickenburg? Go to outwickenburgway.com for all the latest events and information, or stop in at the Chamber of Commerce and Visitors Center in the historic Santa Fe Railway Station on Frontier Street. Cave Creek. In Maricopa County, Cave Creek may be one of the most eclectic and fun towns to visit and live in. Abutting the Tonto National Forest on the far northeastern end of the suburban sprawl of the Valley of the Sun, the once-isolated ranching and mining town is a mecca for horse lovers, artists, bikers, tourists, sports lovers, and even a few miners. Despite the summer heat, Cave Creek is a four-season destination as its elevation and low-density desert community is always about 10 degrees cooler than downtown Phoenix. The core of downtown Cave Creek is walkable and bikeable between antique shops, restaurants, bars, and art galleries. But don't be surprised if you have to dodge some road apples along the way, because locals still ride their horses into town and tie them up at their favorite watering holes. A great way to enjoy the town's Western heritage is at the annual Cave Creek Rodeo held in March. The Cave Creek Museum celebrates the town's Western past and provides a good overview of the community's mining, ranching, and cultural past and present. The funky town is well known for its popular watering holes, El Encanto, Tonto Bar and Grill, the Horny Toad, the Hideaway, and Buffalo Chip Saloon and Steakhouse. But don't miss a meal or drink at the local gyms, Janie's Indian Village, Z's House of Thai, and the Grotto Cafe. Cave Creek's Visitor's Center is a great place to start when visiting the Desert Burg, and the town's website, cavecreekaz.gov, carries all the latest information on local hotels, restaurants, shops, entertainment, and upcoming events. Southern Arizona. Like many Western states, Arizona's economy was built on the strength of its natural resources. From the first Spanish settlements in southern Arizona in the late 17th century to the present day, rich veins of silver, gold, and copper, especially copper, led to major and minor mining operations across the region. Many of the historic Arizona mining settlements across southern Arizona can still be visited today and enjoyed for their history, culture, and natural beauty. Tombstone. Is there an Old West town in America with greater renown than Tombstone? I would dare say that only Dodge City and Deadwood challenge Tombstone for preeminence as the most infamous and iconic boomtown of the Wild West. The town, too tough to die, is thriving in its role as a living history center of Cochise County's frontier past. The southeastern Arizona city has established itself as a four-season destination and as one of the most popular communities in the state for historic reenactments and Old West festivals, including Vigilante Days in February, Wild West Days in March, and Rose Festival in April, Wyatt Earp Days in May, Doc Holidays in August, and El Dorado Days in October. In addition to the festivals, Tombstone has a grand collection of local and state museums. Many visitors start their tours at Boot Hill Graveyard and then go to the Tombstone County Courthouse State Historic Park, both of which provide strong introductions into the town's history. Downtown, a tour of the Tombstone Epitaph Museum, the Birdcage Theater, and the OK Corral, at minimum, should be scheduled during a long weekend stay. And of course, don't miss a chance to enjoy the lively atmosphere at Big Nose Kate's and the Crystal Palace Saloons. The city's visitor center at 395 East Allen Street is always a great place to begin a visit to Tombstone. Or better yet, before you hit the road, go online to discovertombstone.com for all the latest information on the Western town. Bisbee. Like its central Arizona kin, Jerome and Prescott, Bisbee is a historic testament to Arizona's territorial mining heritage. But while the first settlers in Prescott had gold fever, it was silver and copper that led to the founding of Bisbee. The owners of the Copper Queen Mine assayed a rich vein of copper in 1880, and for 93 years, the mine operated as one of the most productive in the state and country. When visitors booked themselves into one of the local hotels, inns, and bed and breakfasts in the Mile High border city, they will be able to easily immerse themselves in the rich history of Bisbee. The highly walkable historic district, steep for some, so driving is an option for higher reaches of the city, is filled with great shops, restaurants, and bars. The historic entertainment district, the Queen Mine, and Bisbee Mining and Historical Museum are all walking distance from each other, while the nearby communities of Naco and Warren, don't miss a visit to the historic baseball field, are a short drive away. A trip to Bisbee should not be considered complete without a stop at the Bisbee Mining and Historical Museum and taking the Queen Mine Tour. The docents who take you underground on the little trains are usually retired miners, and when they ask you to turn off your headlamps, the darkness and stillness of the mine are truly remarkable and an experience you won't soon forget. Want more information on visiting Bisbee? Stop by the Visitor Center or go to discoverbisbee.com to plan your tour. Clifton. Clifton, like Tombstone and Bisbee, was founded in 1873 because of the rich ores in the neighboring mountains and drainages of the San Francisco River and its tributaries. Copper soon became the dominant ore of the local mines of the Greenlee County boomtown. Mines, smelters, and railroads were built, and the district became, and still is, one of the richest copper mining communities in North American history. In the 1920s, the Colorado Trail, U.S. Highway 191, originally U.S. Highway 666, connected Clifton and the White Mountains of eastern Arizona. Ever since, the Scenic Highway, also known as the Devil's Highway, has been renowned equally for its switchbacks and natural beauty. It offers one of the great driving experiences in Arizona and the American Southwest. Today, visitors to Clifton can relax in the historic district of Clifton. Stop in the Visitor Center, where the welcoming staff can guide you to local lodging, restaurants, museums, shopping, and outdoor activities. Before you go, learn more at the city's website, cliftonaz.com. Stuart Rosebrook loves the back roads of Arizona and has been writing professionally about the Grand Canyon State for nearly 40 years. Arkansas, Oklahoma, Missouri. Discover the western frontier on a tour of three gateway states to the Old West by Eric J. Wright. A road trip through the states of Arkansas, Missouri, and Oklahoma would quickly prove to non-believers that the violent ways of the frontier flourished here, too. While the thick underbrush, tall trees, and rolling hillsides conflict with the popular image of the western United States, the three gateway states embody the spirit and the history of the Wild West. Arkansas. Beginning in the state's far northeast corner, near the Missouri Bootheel, lies Paragould, the county seat of Greene County. For decades, from the 1870s through the turn of the century, Greene County and Paragould was an epicenter of violence and lawlessness. Named for the railroad magnates whose tracks crossed in the middle of town, Paragould is perhaps most famous for the 1909 murder of Charles Gragg by James Trammell. The killer fled to San Francisco and was apprehended before fleeing a second time, never to be heard from again by local authorities. But it turns out that Trammell had escaped to North South Wales, Australia, where he died an old man in 1966. Today, the site of the killing is preserved as a boutique clothing store along a quaint and restored downtown shopping district. Traveling southwest past Little Rock, you'll find hot springs. If you can look past all the glitz and glamour of the gangster era, the intrepid visitor will discover a rich Western history. It was here that legendary lawman Bat Masterson visited and stayed at the famed Arlington Hotel. In March 1899, Hot Springs Chief of Police Thomas C. Toler and the Garland County Sheriff Bob Williams fought for authority over the town's gambling and the illegal kickbacks that came with it. The feud boiled over with supporters from both factions on Central Avenue in Hot Springs, and five were killed and three wounded. North and west of Hot Springs sits the state's most famous symbol of frontier law and order, the courtroom of the hanging judge, Isaac Parker. Established in 1872, the Federal Court for the Western District of Arkansas oversaw legal proceedings in Arkansas and the Indian Territory, now Oklahoma. A no-nonsense judge, Parker quickly earned a fearsome reputation, and the jail which Parker oversaw soon became known as Hell on the Border. Located nearby is the U.S. Marshals Museum. When once completed, will highlight the history of the Marshalsea since 1789. Just north of the museum is Crawford County, Arkansas, and the birthplace of Bass Reeves, the first black deputy U.S. Marshal west of the Mississippi River. Born into slavery in 1838, Reeves and his family were enslaved by an Arkansas lawmaker and in 1846 moved with his owner to Texas. During the Civil War, it is believed, Reeves escaped and fled to the Indian Territory, where he lived until the 13th Amendment took effect. He returned to Arkansas as a farmer, and in 1875, he was appointed as a deputy U.S. Marshal for the Western District of Arkansas because of his ability to speak several native languages. Reeves served as one of Parker's most trusted and dependable deputies and worked in that capacity until 1907, with a record of 3,000 felony arrests. Oklahoma. Outlawry in the Sooner State is well-documented history. From Judge Parker's deafening gavel on the other side of the border to many outlaw gangs, Oklahoma is sure to please even the most scrupulous Old West buff. From Fort Smith, you can drive just north of Oklahoma City to the city of Guthrie. There, you can visit the gravesite of notorious outlaw Bill Doolin and see where he led a monumental jailbreak of 13 prisoners in 1896. Doolin was killed by U.S. Deputy Marshal Heck Thomas in Lawton, which lies southwest of Oklahoma City. While in Lawton, visit the famous Quanah Parker Star House in nearby Cache. The house was built by famed Comanche Chief Parker many years after his formal surrender in 1875. Once off the warpath, Parker became interested in elevating his status among his fellow Comanches, as well as his reputation with fellow cattlemen in the area. So he built the two-story, 10-bedroom house with large white stars on the roof. Some believe the stars represented, in Parker's view, the rank of a military general. Another notable Indian leader has a story in Lawton. The notorious Geronimo, who helped to lead the final Apache resistance until his surrender in 1886, died at Fort Sill in 1909 as a prisoner of war. His grave can be visited, but it is found on the military installation, and visiting the site requires special permitting from the fort's visitor center. Getting back on the outlaw trail with the Doolin gang, you can travel just a few miles northeast to the crossroads settlement of Ingalls. Here, on September 1, 1893, a running battle occurred when two wagon loads of federal officers tried to catch the gang. Shots were exchanged between the parties, and in the explosive fight, an outlaw named Arkansas Tom was killed along with three of the officers. In the western part of the state, near the town of Cheyenne, is the Washita Battlefield National Historic Site. Here, on the freezing morning of November 27, 1868, Lieutenant Colonel George Armstrong Custer and four brigades of the 7th Cavalry overran a sleeping village of Cheyenne people and killed an estimated 60 men, women, and children. The massacre was part of the overarching fight for control of the Great Plains during the height of westward expansion. Missouri. Missouri may very well be the cradle of the American frontier. It was from Missouri that the Lewis and Clark expedition left for their journey to the Pacific and back. Missouri was also home to the American fur trade empire, with the St. Louis landing being an eyewitness to many notable figures, including James Beckworth, Hugh Glass, Manuel Lisa, William Ashley, and Andrew Henry. Missouri is also the final resting place of frontier figures William Clark, Samuel Hawken, John Coulter, Jim Bridger, William Tecumseh Sherman, and Dred Scott. If one can ignore the urban sprawl in places like St. Louis and Kansas City, the sights and sounds of these long-forgotten stories may still be heard. During the California Gold Rush, many Missourians were seen as a lesser class of miner and were often called pukes by those who dismissed their rough-and-tumble ways. The name may have originated from the number of 49ers who hailed from Pike County, which is just north of St. Louis, along the Mississippi River. It was from the banks of the Mississippi River at Westport Landing that the Great Migration in 1848 jumped off. Here, thousands of hardy individuals and brave families set their sights west toward Utah, California, and Oregon. Missouri was also home to some of the most notorious outlaws in the frontier West. Beginning with the Civil War era, Confederate guerrilla leader William Quantrill terrorized the countryside while apprehending escaped slaves. The group under his leadership later became known as Quantrill's Raiders and was responsible for many violent attacks on towns in Missouri and Kansas. Emerging from this chaos of war and scorched earth tactics were young outlaws, including the James Gang. Jesse and his brother Frank were both from Kearney, Missouri, in the northwest part of the state, and first gained notoriety after they joined pro-Confederate guerrilla groups. After the Civil War, outlaws like the James Boys continued to pillage by robbing trains and banks, and ultimately Jesse James became one of the most symbolic of all the American outlaws. His death at the hands of Robert Ford, also a Missourian, in April 1882, would be avenged in 1892 at Creed, Colorado, by Ed O'Kelly, a native of Harrisonville, which is just south of today's Kansas City. Missouri's most famous contribution to the lore of the violent days of the frontier West may be the unbelievable, but true, duel between James Butler, Wild Bill Hickok, and Davis Tutt in the town square in Springfield. In July 1865, just after the end of the Civil War, Springfield was a hub for soldiers, spies, and scouts who filled that city's gambling halls and saloons. Hickok, who had been on friendly terms with an Arkansan named Davis Tutt, became enraged when Tutt grabbed a prized pocket watch belonging to Hickok for collateral over a gambling debt. Hickok warned him to return the watch, but Tutt refused, and the two men met in the town square. Shots rang out simultaneously from both pistols at the incredible distance of 75 yards. Tutt dropped from a mortal wound to the chest, while Hickok was not wounded. Hickok's status of frontier celebrity was just beginning when, after the affair, a reporter named James Ward Nichols from Harper's New Monthly worked to embolden the story of Hickok for national readers. A trip through the states of Arkansas, Oklahoma, and Missouri would be a family-friendly adventure through time. Load up the car with the kids, snacks, and some history books, and go off in search of the hidden treasures of each state's gems of true Western history. Eric J. Wright published his first article in True West at age 16. He now serves as the assistant editor of the Tombstone Epitaph and lives in Paragould, Arkansas. And we're going to have to end the story at this point with the article From Montana to Texas, A Summer Road Trip is a Great Way to Immerse Yourself in the History and Heritage of the American West. This is from the April 2023 edition of True West Magazine. We will conclude this article with the states Texas and South Dakota next week.
Thank you for joining us for the Western Magazine Hour. Stories and articles about the American West. Your narrator has been Jack. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.